south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, you know, the whole point of this show is to talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great in Latin America, huh? And, man, sometimes it's as if I'm the only one who talks about the bad and the ugly. All the other expat blogs and also RANs always seem to pump up whatever area they live in or recommend, probably because they've got some interest in doing that, selling real estate, pet projects, teak farms, those dreaded timeshares, whatever. Well, today you're going to hear some of the bad and the ugly and someone throwing rocks directly at me. They say, you know, if you're in the radio or media business, if you don't get hate mail, or at least people beating you up sometime for what you said or they think you said, if you don't, you're not making much of an impact, and you're pretty much nothing but mediocre. Well, we can't have that now, can we? Stay tuned, and you'll hear how a lady body slammed me a bit on a recent email. But first, let's talk a little bit about safety and security when traveling around. I want to tell you a little trick that expat Eddie's been using a long, long time. He said he didn't invent it, but he picked it up from a Milwaukee clergyman named Pastor Paul. Now, as for Eddie, he's the kind of guy who traveled the world both as a backpacker and, in recent years, first class, too, all depending on his financial condition at the time. And Eddie's the kind of guy who's much more comfortable in a $20 a night flea bag hotel than in a suite at the Hilton, let me tell you. Now, to Eddie's everlasting credit, he can make friends with people faster than anyone I've ever met. People tell me, and I know this is true, he's the kind of guy, when they first meet him, they felt they've known him their whole life. A guy people, even strangers, will unburden themselves to. And Eddie's found out that sometimes, you know, when you go drinking and partying with people you've just met, especially when you're a young 20-something backpacker, well, sometimes the partying and the movable feasts get out of hand. You end up waking up in unfamiliar surroundings, and maybe your glasses, your backpack, even your wallet have gone missing. That ever happened to you? And it might be that there was no foul play involved at all. Sometimes it depends on the size of your hangover. You just might not remember. Now, Eddie, of course, he's settled down a lot now. In his early days of traveling, met Padre Paul at one of these get-togethers, and he showed him a little trick. He wears two pairs of socks, and they have to be the very same color. And he's created for himself a little secret compartment between the two pairs of socks. So you can put an amount of money from 300 to even 1,000 bucks in a place no one would ever guess. So for years, Eddie's been using that method as his secret emergency stash. So how's it work? Well, it's simple. First, you put one pair of socks on in the normal way. Next, he takes a little cellophane envelope, something that collectors put their baseball cards in. You can buy them at coin shops, pawn shops, and hobby centers. They're no more than a few cents each. And you only need one or two if you're using them for both feet. If you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see a photo come up right now. So what Eddie does is he takes fresh, sort of new $100 bills, folds them in half, flattens them out, puts them in one of these little cellophane wrappers, takes a tiny piece of scotch tape, tapes that to the bottom of the first sock that's already on his foot. He centers it right under the curved arch. Then he slips the other sock on and voila. Everywhere he goes, he's got a little stash of cash, even if someone steals his shoes. Yep, no matter what happens, like a spare tire in the trunk of your car, he knows he's covered for emergencies. By the way, if you use that method yourself, you can smirk when you take off your shoes and walk through the TSA metal detectors. Yep, they think they know everything about you. They've x-rayed you. They've run their dirty little fingers through everything you've got. At least you know you've held on to a little bit of your privacy. Not that there's anything illegal about it, but in a way you do get the last laugh. A kind of a small slap in the face of Big Brother's overreaching authority. You know, it doesn't have to be paper money you put in there either. It could be, let's say, a half ounce or 1 ounce gold coin. I know you're thinking it might be uncomfortable walking around all day with money, or worse yet, a gold coin in your shoe. And you know what? The first 5 minutes, you're focusing on it. But after a short while, you don't notice it anymore at all. Because, you know, it's the upper ball of your foot and the heel that takes all the pressure when you walk. The curve of your foot, the arch, is really always kind of suspended and not taking any pressure at all. And that's where the hidden stash is. So then why not a credit card? Well, you'd feel that because that's stiff. And anyway, if you really had to use your secret stash, you know the old saying, cash is king. And gold, even better. And though you may have been reading lately that the slow demise or even quick demise of cash is in the works and is being phased out in many countries already, as long as you're in Latin America, that seems to be quite an impossibility. And that's not just talk. I want you to hear portions of this recent article. It comes from one of Spain's largest newspapers. It hits on what I just mentioned, the possibility of going to a cashless society in Latin America. First, they discuss whether it's possible to eliminate cash in Colombia. Starts out by saying, Colombia's black market and cash economy continues to grow despite attempts of authorities to control it. According to the National Association of Financial Institutions, ANICIF, the size of Colombia's underground economy, which includes various degrees of illegalities, pirated products, and all in cash, amounts to 35% of the country's GDP in 2017. So 35% of Colombia's economy is cash. And it says the biggest reason for the cash economy is evasion of taxes. Not only that, companies and businesses can avoid contributions to Social Security and pensions and never have to register with the tax authorities. And get this, then it says the underground economy or gray market in Colombia consists of labor informalities of up to 64% of the economically active population. They're saying 64% of the people working in Colombia are working for cash and are not on the books, which is just amazing, isn't it? You gotta love it. That infers, of course, that 64% does not trust the government. Not with their tax money, anyway. Sound familiar? Then it says, as for Colombia, the tax burden for businesses on the books is much more onerous than for businesses in adjacent Latin countries because of the so-called 4 por mil tax on all financial transactions through official channels. That's a tax of 0.4%, nearly 0.5%, on all financial transactions that go through official channels. That'd be using banks and checks and wire transfers, etc. Of course, if you're off the books, in the so-called gray economy, cash transactions are invisible to state regulatory authorities, so they can't recoup that 4 por mil, 0.4% financial transaction tax. So there's a huge incentive in Colombia anyway to stay completely off the books. And man, the Colombian people have really caught on to that. So as for gringos and expats, think about that if you're ever planning on going to Colombia and starting up a business that's on the books. Everyone I know in Colombia who's tried to open a legit business tells me it's a nightmare, which is why so many people have virtual or IT businesses that aren't registered. They're in the cloud, so to speak. Then the article says, in most of Colombia, available figures indicate that about 90% of all transactions on the street are made in cash. Again, mainly in order to avoid the 4 por mil tax on all financial transactions. So then, how does that compare with the rest of Latin American countries? Well, it says Colombia is very similar to Mexico, with an underground economy in Mexico of 40% of GDP, meaning 40% of the transactions in Mexico are off the books and no one's paying taxes. And Peru has even a much larger informal economy. Their underground economy represents 60% of GDP, meaning only 40% of the transactions are on the books and paying taxes. And the Latin country that's most in line, most first world-like, and with the smallest informal economy, take a guess. Well, it's Chile, with the informal economy making up around 18.7% of GDP. So I ask you, how is it possible that Latin countries could suddenly say, hey, no more cash, we're going with the 100% digital economy? That would be impossible, at least not in our lifetimes. However, up where you live, in the next couple of years anyway, it's 100% certainty. You know, in some of the European countries where the sheep are well-trained, they've already done it. They've eliminated cash. And the people bought right into it. Well, they have to. What choice do they have except for maybe gold, silver, platinum, and Bitcoin? But we were talking about traveling safely, right? We all know in today's smart devices, the weak points are always the batteries. That's why you see those mini charge stations everywhere, from airports to Starbucks to IHOP. And now they're even showing up in certain public crappers. I'm sure you've seen it at airports and lounges, people queuing up to get one last charge or battery top off on that smartphone. Now, being an engineer in my past life and having a lot of geek friends, You have to realize that most of these guys are hermetically fused to their smart devices. If they didn't have that constant connection, they'd probably just wither and die. Though not because they're surfing the entertainment news on the net to see if Nicki Minaj has a bigger butt than the retardassians. Wait a minute. I take that back. Some nerds are secretly into porn. I've known many sexually frustrated young IT types and engineers who never had a real date all through their 20s. That is, not until they made their first million, anyway. Funny how that works, huh? I mean, come on, look at that studly He-Man Zuckerberg. Seems like it didn't take millions, but billions to make him attractive to the opposite sex. In fact, not so long ago, one expat lady friend said he looks like a cross between Woody Allen and Jerry Lewis. Oh man, first world gringos can be cruel, huh? But where were we? Oh yeah, talking about batteries in smart devices. You see, I've been told over and over again by my nerdish friends not to charge a phone or any other device at a public USB charge station, restaurant, airport, whatever. They've been telling me for a long time to either bring your own extra battery pack device, you know, you've seen those, or find a 110 outlet and bring your own converter. Why? Because it's the latest, greatest phase for hackers to try to infect public charging stations with malware. So just note that every time you plug in your phone to charge it anywhere, you're opening up to receiving extraneous viruses and unwanted pieces of data. So don't do it unless you've got your own little portable charging unit or a converter that you're plugging right into a 110 outlet and using it solely by yourself. Otherwise, man, you can certainly bet you're going to get a virus or your data is going to get stolen somehow. And you won't even know it. Just a little warning and a heads up there. In fact, nowadays, every time I pass a Starbucks or a restaurant or a backpacker hostel, when I see all those warm bodies cozying up to a charging hub, I just shake my head and think, man, you're asking for it. However, it's completely safe to charge up a device in the USB port of your car. Maybe. Depends how wired your car is to the internet. But definitely, I'd avoid charging a device in other people's cars, especially a rental car. I mean, if you want to just unlock and open up your device to everyone, just charge it in a USB port in a Hertz, Avis, Budget, or any rent-a-car. Now, you can pretty much use a USB port to charge up your little battery brick device. And when that's charged, use it for what it's intended, to charge one of your devices. But just don't go plugging in your USB to any open outlet just because you think, hey, gotta top off that battery. This might be the first time you ever heard a spiel like that, but you'll hear it again from others, I'm sure. All right, so this show is going out Friday, June 16th. Means you got about 3 weeks left to get in on my Expat Insider Seminar. Starts July 8th. Yep, I've got a few spots left. You can still get in. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link, and you're there. And if you hurry, you can still kill two birds with one stone by applying for your Guatemalan temporary or permanent residency while you're down for the seminar. And note, in that seminar blurb, you'll find out all about those cool John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips. Now, if you can't swing boots on the ground just yet or come into the seminar, you really have to sign up for my Expat Essentials course. It's a 9-hour video course featuring yours truly. Just go to www.expatplanb.com. Check it out. That's where you'll get 3 free introductory videos to the course. And if you need some personalized help with your own Plan B, no matter what stage you're in right now, just go to thenewexpat.com website and download my telephone consult form. Have a look at that questionnaire to see if you've missed anything along the way with your own Plan B. So yes, I'm available for one-on-one consults by phone or Skype. Just download that questionnaire form and you'll see the details on that. And of course, if you sign up and come to one of my seminars, the phone consult is free. All right, let's get to that email from one of my Latina listeners who wants to beat me up. As usual, I'll comment along the way, this time trying to defend my weak positions if I can. You know, right off the bat, I sometimes get the feeling people are out to hammer me when they don't say Johnny or Dear Johnny or anything. They just shoot right into the body of the email, like this. She starts out, "I have to admit that I usually enjoy your podcast, maybe for the same reasons I listen to Narco Corridos, because you are interesting, entertaining, and maybe I might learn something new. Unfortunately, I just have to put up with some shit to get some choice morsels. I don't think Latin America needs more gringos. However, you have done a tremendous job at creating an employment opportunity for yourself, and obviously, you are quite good at it. You are intelligent, articulate, and do a great deal of research in order to offer an excellent service to your clientele. But I will still affirm that some, but not all, of your opinions truly suck, especially concerning undocumented immigrants to the States. And I will continue to gnaw on that bone later, maybe in another email. Okay, it's me, Johnny, here. Can't you tell she's buttering me up for the sucker punch? By the way, for the millionth time, they're not undocumented immigrants. They're illegal aliens who, in order to survive day after day, month after month, year after year in the States, they have to commit multiple crimes besides the original crime of coming in illegally. What most law-abiding citizens never consider is that in order to work, get benefits, send remises, etc., they have to buy or create illegal false identities from criminals or commit identity theft themselves, which really screws up the life of the person whose identity has been stolen. In fact, most of us know a friend, a family member, or acquaintance who's had his identity stolen, and one of the driving forces behind that is to sell those identities to illegal aliens. You know, when she says, I don't think Latin America needs more gringos. Now, that's what I say too, especially concerning those horribly gringoized areas like Panama, Costa Rica, most of Mexico. I mean, hell, there's 1.5 million gringos living in Mexico right now. And once in a while, in those highly gringoized areas, you'll hear Latins complain that the gringos are changing their culture, raising the prices, this and that. Can't blame them. They are. But you know, it's like the old song. They smile in your face all the while they want to take your place. The Backstabbers. Remember that? By the OJs, right? So how do I know that Latins sometimes talk about how the gringos have flooded in and they don't like it much anymore? By the way, you'll never hear that off the gringo tourist trail, only where they've actually flooded in. Even then, that anti-gringo rhetoric is pretty much a rarity. How do I know that? Well, that's because I can speak Spanish, decent enough anyway. And when you're on the gringo tourist trail, the locals don't think anybody can speak Spanish because it's mostly tourists, and they don't. And being down here for 27 years now, I've overheard a lot of Spanish conversations I'm sure people didn't want me to pick up on. But the truth is, every last Latin person living on the gringo tourist trail is making money from the gringos somehow, or they wouldn't be there. Even though gringos eventually raise prices in the areas they flood into, the Latins living there always have a better lifestyle too. As one Latin guy told me, who has a little restaurant in a gringoized area, he said, "The grass is always greener where the gringos are." Isn't that irony for you? So when educated Latins, a couple of generations living in the States, gringoized U.S. citizens who speak perfect English, whose own parents or grandparents came in illegally, say things like, they don't think it's right that gringos flood Latin America. Isn't that ironic? And you know, 99.9% of all the gringos living in Latin America had to get their residency or came in legally. Otherwise, Latin countries will catch you and kick you out as you're going across borders. Or more than likely, make you pay a fine for overstaying your visa. They know you're good for the dough. In fact, they want you to stay as a tourist and spend money. In fact, they kind of like it when you overstay your visa because they can collect more money there, too. So, you know, it kind of strikes me funny when people say they don't want more gringos in their home Latin countries. And I've only really heard that from educated, gringoized Latins from up in the States. But it is funny that when you come down to Latin America, every single convenience that makes life easy, I'm talking about 20th and 21st century progress. From cars to water heaters to dishwashers, vacuum cleaners, TVs, radios, cell phones, airplanes, lasers, computers, the internet, heart bypass operations, everything was invented by either an American or a European. So the world that you know, with all its conveniences, was created by North Americans or Europeans. You could lump them all in and call them gringos if you like. But let's keep the gringos out of our country, right? Even though when they come in, they prosper like crazy. They bring along those first world details with them. They hire locals and increase their standards and standard of living too. Bottom line, Latins have a huge inferiority complex. They won't admit it outright, but you see evidence of it everywhere. And nothing drives that point home like that little story I told, I think it was 5 years ago now, and it's worth repeating. Now, a gringo friend of mine was head of maintenance for a certain very popular brand of helicopters for all of Latin America. So his job was to train technically proficient Latins to be mechanics at all the big airports throughout Latin America to do service on this brand of helicopters. Now, he told me that time and time again, he'd be at an airport and some multi-millionaire Latin bigwig would fly in with his helicopter. His helicopter would be in for routine maintenance and he'd walk up to my friend at the airport and say, "I want you to do the maintenance on my helicopter." And he'd say, "Well, I'm the head of maintenance for the entire Latin region. I don't fix the helicopters myself. I'm the boss of the maintenance guys. But these pompous Latin millionaire guys would say, but I want you to do the maintenance on my helicopter. And my friend, the only gringo in the outfit, would say, not me, I don't do that. My maintenance guys do that kind of thing. And the guy would pull out a wad of cash or his checkbook and say, how much? You get it? These guys don't trust their own countrymen. They want gringos to do the maintenance. Yep, they know. Details, details, right? Even though my gringo buddy said he had some real crack mechanics, the best. Now, what does that say about the Latin culture? Okay, here's more of that email. Johnny, I'm truly curious to know why you think I'm a Latina who has never lived in Latin America. Is that you think my love for Mexico keeps me from seeing the realities? I'm not like gringo nationalists who approve of or are ignorant of all the horrific things the U.S. has done around the world, beginning with the genocide of the American Indians. When I hear racist remarks coming from my Mexican friends, I like to remind them that their lighter skin comes from the fact that some gachapines, that's Espanoles, raped some Indian women in their genetic past and that the Indians are the true Mexicans. I lived in Mexico during the 60s and 70s in three totally different environments. In Mexico City, I studied at UNAM and fortunately was not murdered because a friend kept me away from the protest. Then I got a job with some gringo evangelical missionaries where I taught primary school to their orphanage kids and served as an interpreter for the two of them who did not know Spanish. So in truth, I was an undocumented immigrant in Mexico and cheated some Mexican-born individual out of a job. I also had to go to Guatemala every 6 months to renew my tourist visa, too. I loved those old rickety trains from Mexico City to the Guatemalan border, with the big open windows and the kids and the women coming with all sorts of goodies that you would never eat. I say you, Johnny, not me. I learned two valuable lessons from missionaries. First, never to have kids, and secondly, that Karl Marx was right when he said that religion is the opiate of the masses. All right, meet Johnny here again. Just a little comment. You mentioned street food, saying I'd never eat that stuff. No, I won't. One reason is I am a friend of a Latin American gastroenterologist, and he told me that every single lower middle class, and upper middle class Latin who eats street food has intestinal parasites and lombrices, meaning worms. Isn't that sweet? So go ahead, eat that street food. Enjoy. Your lombrices will enjoy it too. Now, my GI specialist buddy says, it's not like what you don't know won't hurt you, because those things do take their toll. And he says whenever they do a full blood workup on a person in the hospital or in a clinic, almost inevitably they'll find intestinal parasites and they'll have to give them some medication to knock it out. Of course, he said it's the same around the world with all societies who eat street food with their fingers. But he did say, that street food sure looks and smells good. So I said, what about you? Do you eat it? He said, well, I did until I saw the pictures in my pathology book and did my clinical rotations and saw that stuff in person. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah. All right, then she says in her email, once we were held at gunpoint in Mexico by some men dressed as federales. They went through everything and did not find much to steal. Only the missionaries' guns. Like that. Missionaries have guns. Good. However, they found my tequila and vodka stash. Oddly enough, they didn't take that stuff. Also, I lived briefly in Michoacán, though I did have to kiss a few Latino frogs before I found my Mexican prince, however. Anyway, I was in Michoacán with one of these frogs who turned out to be gay. My best memory of that relationship is when his keys fell out of my jeans in an outhouse and I made him fish him out. All right, meet Johnny again. By the way, that's one thing most of us men will never understand about women, especially those very hot, good-looking women who, at times, fall for gay guys. Now, as it generally turns out, all through junior high school, college, graduate school, the beautiful, hot, unobtainable girls always got the handsome, debonair guys, right? Except for a few bad boy, Johnny Depp-like troublemakers thrown in for good measure. However, if you played in a rock and roll band, you kind of qualified as a bad boy, so that worked pretty good, too. Anyway, all through those formative years, us guys have had our discussions about guys we knew from the neighborhood or school who were slightly different, who later on we know turned out to be gay. Many of them were well-mannered, good-looking, ever-so-friendly, nice guy, artsy types, too. Yet way back when most were in the closet, they all had girlfriends, always good-looking girlfriends. And us average regular guys could never figure that out. We knew these guys weren't powered by testosterone. How is it that a bunch of regular guys in a school or a neighborhood would bet money that a certain guy was gay, yet the desirable, hot, unobtainable woman he was going with, sometimes for years, never seemed to figure that one out. Of course, you know, later in life, when the girls hit 25, 30, 40 years old, they look back on those times just like Elena does in this email and says, man, yeah, I had a boyfriend who was gay. The other question is, do other ladies notice when their girlfriends are going with a gay guy? Apparently not, because you'd think they'd wise their friend up. That's what friends are for, right? Oh, well, I guess those are a few of those universally unanswerable questions, huh? Oh, and note, in no way am I gay bashing here. I've got a couple of first cousins who are gay. So it's never been a big deal, except when one of them went to seminary school to become a Catholic priest. Uh-oh. Now, there's a story I'll have to tell you sometime, but not now. All right, then Elena says, Johnny, I agree with some of the things you say about dogs. I believe a dog should be what a dog is meant to be, not some yappy little genetic mutant. Again, as for food, if it smells good, tastes good, and I'm not confronted by something gross, it usually goes in. I do think, she says, Latinos have a better immune system than gringos. It's good to be hygienic, of course, but not obsessive. My two most memorable negative food experiences occurred in Guatemala. From eating shrimp on the beach at Champarico. Then there was a fly in the soup incident. I was served a cup of coffee with three dead multi-eye floaters in it. I called the waiter over. He seemed embarrassed and offered to replace the coffee, but no way. He would just have poured it back in the pot and brought me some more, without flies, of course. Then finally she says, Johnny, I admit, I do enjoy your podcast. Well, Elena, thanks for that. I think. You know, when she mentioned about the flies in the restaurant, that reminds me of a famous book called Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman. A huge hit with the counterculture of the 1960s and 70s. It was a book on how to scam the system and get just about anything for free. Of course, it's quite dated now, but the title says it all. He actually wanted you to steal the book from the bookstands. I remember one of the ways to get free food was to put a fly or a cucaracha in a tiny bottle and bring it into the restaurant with you. And in the States, the management will always be most apologetic and give you a free meal. But here in Latin America, that'll never work. They'll apologize and bring back another dish with no guarantee it's a new batch of food. Because, you know, customer service and customer satisfaction are not real big down here yet. Which is another reason why so many gringo businesses absolutely flourish. Anyway, Elena or Elena, thanks for that email and keep throwing those rocks. You know, I have a pretty thick skin. I'm from Chicago, you know. We can dish it out, but we can take it.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.